direct from the entertainment capital of the world, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Jerry Pippin with entertainment news, views, and interviews.
Doorway, winter, spring, summer, or fall, Las Vegas has given it all.
In March of this year, the Street of Dreams will become longer, stretching 8.5 miles from the Mandalay Bay to the new resort called the Elm Resort. It has a $1 billion price tag and is located way south of Las Vegas at Rose Parkway and Las Vegas Boulevard. In fact, technically, it's in Henderson, Nevada, but it does touch Las Vegas at the very edge. The M stands for Mamel Correal Associates. They have been responsible for some of the most outstanding designs and architecture in Las Vegas in history. Included in their roster, Wynn Las Vegas, Bellagio, Mirage, Rio Palazzo Suites, New York, New York, Caesar's Palace, Treasure Island, and the list goes on and on and on. The Elm Resort will be a classy place indeed. 390-room tower, 92,000 square feet of casino area, a 60,000 square foot conference room, a 20,000 square foot, 8 restaurants, 4 bars, 1 entertainment venue, and retail outlets. Oh, yes, I forgot the pool area. That's a mere 100,000 square feet itself. Then there's the 63,000 square foot movie entertainment theater complex with 14 screens. And there are other things I don't have time to go into. We'll be talking more about the Elm Resort as we get closer to the opening. That'll be in March, as I say. Let's go back that 8.5 miles that I mentioned at Mandalay Bay, and on down the street, of course, is the Tropicana. At the Tropicana, an end of an era is about to happen. On March 28th, the historic Folies Bergère closes, less than a year shy of its 50th anniversary. 2 days later, down the street still, a brand new peep show opens at the Planet Hollywood. Could this be the new type of reviews for Las Vegas? Peep Show is being done by Broadway director Jerry Mitchell, who has made no secret of the dream that he wanted to restage for Las Vegas his own version of 21st century productions of things like The Follies and Jubilee. He's best known for his restaged Hairspray version in Las Vegas some years back. So I guess the end of March, and then in April, the torch will be passed from the old way of doing those production shows to something new. Personally, I'm going to miss the old production shows. It was indeed Las Vegas, don't you think? Let's get to the entertainment. On January 30th, at the Orleans Hotel, which is actually not on the Strip, but on West Tropicana, the Smothers Brothers will open. They're still funny after all these years. Here they are on stage, still doing the brother act. And I guess that's because they're brothers.
We like to do at this time a song that my brother wrote. This is original song my brother wrote 5 years ago. My brother wrote this song in a fit of creative passion and genius. My brother wrote this song. And we only performed it, my brother and myself, only 3 times. We performed this song 3 times, and it was immediately stolen from us by this other commercial crass. Was stolen from us by this other commercial crass group that stole the song. They never acknowledged.
Tommy, they just stole the song from my younger brother. Don't go into that. It's just embarrassing to say.
They're adults. They're entitled now. They stole the song from my brother,
along with
his luggage. And they put it on one of the major record companies. They never once and it sold over 3 million records. My brother's song that he wrote, and they never acknowledged it. As a result, it sold over 3 million records, and as a result, pay attention. As a result, every time we perform my own brother's song that he wrote in his creative effort and genius responsible, every time we perform this his own song, we've been ridiculed.
And persecuted.
We've been ridiculed and persecuted every time we perform this song. That people will come up and say, I heard your show and you stole that song from that other commercial crass group. You just stole that song. So we're going to ridicule you and prosecute you.
Persecute you.
So I'd like to take this time to set the record straight. As my brother's depraved of the one...
You were right the first time.
He was depraved of this opportunity of having for posterity to understand and enjoy. I'd like to publicly dedicate the performance of the song to my younger brother for his creative effort and genius in writing the song.
You don't have to do that.
I'm going to, Dickie. Oh. I'd like to publicly dedicate to you, Dickie Smothers, the creative effort and genius responsible for this song. I'd like to publicly dedicate to you at this time.
Thanks.
Swell.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. We'd like to perform it for you now, and I'm sure you've all heard the song many times before, but we'd like to do it for you in the original first time, the first time way in the original.
You mean the virgin time. Edition.
The what?
I said, you mean the Virgin Edition. We'll sing it in the Virgin Edition.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means.
Edition?
We like to do it's original virgin.
No, sing it. Sing it.
Ready?
I'm ready.
I knew it would be ridiculed.
Throughout history, there's been the story of the internal triangle. Eternal triangle. This particular eternal triangle concerned a condemned man named Tom Crudley, a man named Jason, and another man named Sally Jean Johnson.
Hey, now cut that out.
Oh, hang down your head, Tom Crudley.
Poor boy.
Hang down your head and fly. Ha ha ha. Hang down your head, Tom Crudley. I took her several times. I met her on a mountain top, stabbed her with my knife. Hang your head down. Hang your head down. Do hang down your head, Tom Crudley. Poor boy, hang down your head and fly. Hang down your head, Tom Crudley. Poor boy.
That's the Smothers Brothers, still working. They'll be at the Orleans in Las Vegas this weekend, Friday, January 30th through Sunday, February 1st. Motion picture producer Paul Davids, who's also quite a director and a writer in his own right, has been out making the rounds, pushing his new documentary. It's a film you must see. I expect it to win a lot of awards. It's called Jesus in India. We're going to talk to Paul when we come back about his career. And I imagine we'll plug Jesus in India. I think you'll find him a colorful, creative man. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is the Las Vegas Radio Show. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Hello, everyone around the world. Welcome to Las Vegas. And we're broadcasting from the Casbar Lounge, world famous at the Sahara Hotel and Casino. Las Vegas history goes all the way back in the late 50s, when this was the place where all the major entertainers played. We're broadcasting from the same lounge that Don Rickles made a name for himself, appearing nightly. First act I saw at the Casbar was Pete Barbeauty, who did five shows a night, believe it or not, with his piano and all the other instruments and working the crowd. And oh yes, he even had the toilet plunger that he played. Anyway, this place is full of history from Las Vegas on the Las Vegas Radio Show. This is a little bit of the soundtrack music from an unbelievably classic film. And I say that with all my heart. It's called Jesus in India. And it's available on a DVD. You can pick it up by going to JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. And we have a link to it on the website, by the way, at JerryPippin.com. And also an interview with Paul Davids about the movie. But since we're doing the Las Vegas show, I thought we'd talk to Paul about some general things, mainly showbiz. Always great to see you again, Paul. I know we've talked before. One time I did a broadcast from Roswell, and you made a movie about Roswell. In fact, recently, I guess that's the reason you're here in Las Vegas, you made a speech to a group of people about all of the victims of Roswell and what they had to say, the second or third tier witnesses. Did you find out anything new? Can you tell us anything here?
Well, I talked a lot about what we've learned in the last decade since the movie Roswell came out from Showtime.
And that is available on a DVD now.
Artisan came out with the DVD, and people who'd like to get it can find it at Amazon.com very easily. There's a number of shows that have the title Roswell in it, so they have to look for the one that's the movie that stars Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen and Dwight Yoakam.
I want to get into something else with you, the far afield from Roswell, in a moment, but maybe you could give a thumbnail about something interesting about Roswell and not everybody knows. I mean, you know everything there is to know about these people.
Oh, I doubt it.
Yeah, well, you seem to. You've done lots of research. We talked originally how you...
Let's put it this way. I know what they tell me.
Okay.
Only they know what's true. One of the most interesting things I've seen in the last... decade, or some of the people who've come forward, people with a reputation, part of the establishment, part of the military or NASA, who've made confirming statements about the extraterrestrial nature of the Roswell crash. And, you know, that would include two astronauts, the late Gordon Cooper, who we sadly lost recently, wrote a book, a biographical book called Leap of Faith. And in the book, he confirmed what he had told me previously privately and what he said in several video interviews. And he's quite insistent and unequivocal that there has been alien contact and that the information has been withheld from the public.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the movie business, since we teased our audience about the UFO thing.
Sure.
Some interesting things happening with the movies these days. I think you have a new project yourself, don't you? You've been involved in a few things. You're working on something. You guys, Hollywood guys, always are.
Well, there's you always have 10 irons in the fire, and you see which stake falls into the fire and burns, and which one come out medium well or very well. No, I think there's a few things I'm not prepared to announce yet on the radio, but Richard Hoagland and I have had a project in the works for a long time, and we thought we were going to have a green light from the studio we were working with, RKO Pictures, one of the oldest studios in Hollywood. In fact, they made King Kong back in the 30s, and after a lot of development with RKO, their production plans fell out for all of the pictures that they were working on and developing, and it left us in limbo for a while, but I can see the daylight now because there's been some renewed and very, very strong interest in what I think is an absolutely excellent, excellent project, a tense political thriller that has so much to say about what's been happening right here on Earth while we've been trying to make those discoveries on Mars, the political battles.
As I guess they say, pre-development instead of post-development or whatever.
Well, development is the phase of a project when you're putting the screenplay together and getting it to a point where everybody can say, that's it, that's what we're going to shoot. We've been in development with the project for several years.
Further along than that.
Yeah, we have a screenplay ready to shoot that's generating a lot of excitement.
Seems Hollywood likes sequels all of a sudden. Have you noticed that?
Well, it's not been all of a sudden. It's been for a couple of decades now.
Yeah, I guess it's a business reason.
Well, Jerry, it is because the studios want franchises. You want to reduce your risk. And if you have a project that's been a success, Jaws 1 generates Jaws 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a half.
Easy to get money for those projects.
Well, particularly the most successful ones, the studios are eager to follow up a successful act. Occasionally, the filmmaker puts the brakes on. You haven't seen a sequel to E.T. You haven't seen one to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Bring people out.
Well, you're a scriptwriter as well.
Yes.
Which helps, I imagine. When we talk about Hollywood, you've had TV projects, lots of TV projects too. At least you've talked to. One of the things you're involved in. See, I got to find out what Paul David's up to.
Well, I wanted to talk about something from the past, and the Transformers show was probably the most popular cartoon show in the United States in the late 1980s. Was based on the Hasbro Bradley toys, the Transformer toys, the robots.
Yeah, I remember
they changed shapes into everything. And we had 150 toy characters that we based that show on, with the stars, of course, being Megatron and Optimus Prime. There was one film made. I hear now they're going to make a major feature film of the Transformers using state-of-the-art CGI effects. I'm really looking forward to it. We have a Transformers convention, at least one every year in a different part of the country. There's one that's called BotCon, Robot Convention, BotCon. Mm-hmm. But the characters of the Transformers are the Autobots and the Decepticons, so that's how you get BotCon there also. And thousands of fans show up every year. You have all the Transformer toys there, and we had some wonderful stories. I was aboard as production coordinator for over 80 half hours of that show. I was there for 90-95% of the life of the show. It was really fabulous science fiction, tremendous imagination, and these stories are now all available from Rhino Entertainment on DVD. There are these beautiful box sets that have come out, where you can get all of the Transformer half hours that were ever produced. So I was in production on just about all of them, and then I wrote four episodes that are really remembered by these fans. It's amazing.
time. It does a real kick. Have you been to some of those conventions?
I do go to the conventions. We had one in Pasadena this year. I was one back east in North Carolina a couple of years ago. And we get our original voice actors to come to these. Peter Cullen was the voice of our star, Optimus Prime. And the lineup of people to get Peter Cullen's autograph this year, I still call them kids. It's the adults in their 20s who grew up on these shows when they were 10. They stand in line 3 hours to get his autograph. Their patience to get my autograph is maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's 19 longer than mine.
So that was a great part of my past. And the other thing I look back on so fondly was my involvement with Star Wars. Not the movies, but sequel books. And in the early 1990s, before we saw Star Wars number one, the one with the very young Anakin Skywalker, there was quite a number of years that went between, I believe it was 1983 was Return of the Jedi, as I recall. And into the 1990s, we got the next Star Wars. So the folks at Lucasfilm were looking for a way to keep Star Wars in the mind of their fans during those many years. And my wife and I had come up with an idea for a series of books that eventually they found a publisher for them, Bantam Books. And we wrote books such as The Glove of Darth Vader and The Lost City of the Jedi. Then there was Zorba the Hutt's Revenge. Now, Zorba is Jabba the Hutt's father. We invented Zorba. Not to be confused with Zorba the Greek.
I guess he wouldn't have to have a father. You just can't really conceive that.
We did Mission from Mount Yoda and Queen of the Empire, in which Princess Leia almost marries the head of the Empire. And then there was Prophets of the Dark Side. Unfortunately, after about a decade, the books they went out of print, so you have to get them as used books now. But they sold millions of copies before they retired them after a decade. And it was quite a ride. They're all illustrated. And they're new stories. It's not the stories of the movies, but they follow Return of the Jedi. They take a 5-year period of time in the history of the Empire and the Rebel Alliance after the Return of the Jedi, and they sort of fill in the blanks there.
You know, the movie business, for instance, they spent $125 million promoting a recent film, which is just amazing to me, the money they spend on promotion alone. We're not talking about the production values, and a major studio ends up spending ungodly amounts of money. How come it costs so much for a major against an independent to put a motion picture out?
Well, you know, all the rules have changed, and the budgets have changed. I mean, today you can have an independent movie that costs more than $50 million and has major stars. Traffic with Michael Douglas was considered an independent picture. I think it was, you know, an $80 million budget? I mean, how is this an independent? The meaning of it all has changed. And the budgets are so large, the sophistication of special effects, the visuals, requires so much. It costs a lot to make them, and then you've got to make them a household word. And to do that, you know, you've got to have your posters on buses, on billboards across the country. You've got to be in primetime television. It's absolutely immense, and many of them fall by the wayside.
It's kind of event marketing for everything, then.
It is. Now, and I, you know, it's a trend I don't welcome necessarily. I mean, I think that it's a great place for the big pictures, but we need the small pictures. We need the intimate pictures. In the old days, well, when I was growing up, we always had the B picture. We had the double feature. You know, an expensive picture where on budgets of, you know, $1 to $8 million, and there was a place for the $200,000 or $300,000 movie. And Roger Corman was a low budget producer who produced hundreds of them. And you see, he was able to give so much young talent a break. because the movies didn't cost that much. And that's what we've lost, what we don't have anymore. What happens to the...
Cannot even do that for television now.
No, the TV movies have such an expense. I mean, look at Steven Spielberg's Taken for the Sci-Fi Channel. 10-part miniseries. Yes. Immensely expensive. Look at Children of Doom. Well...
We were just talking about Adonis earlier.
The budgets are up and up and up and up. Now, you do have the film festivals around the country that show the small films. Once in a while, one of them will get picked up and it'll get distribution. It happened to me. Your viewers might not know some of my non-UFO films, but I'm an artist. I'm very interested in the arts. I invite your viewers to go to my website, pauldavids.com, and I spell my last name David with an S, Paul Davids, one word. I've got an art gallery there with over 100 of my paintings, and I made a film about Vincent van Gogh called Starry Night, and it was made on a low budget, and it went to the film festival circuit, and finally Universal Pictures picked it up, and they put it out on video and DVD throughout the country. Then they started selling it to television around the world, and it's really gotten out there, but that was a stroke of luck. You see, it doesn't happen very often.
Starry Night.
Starry Night. Like the words of the song by Don McLean,
yes,
Starry, Starry Night. It's the name of a Van Gogh painting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fantasy in which the artist Vincent van Gogh, who only sold one painting in his lifetime, whose paintings are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, the aggregate of his lifetime's work today would probably value $2 billion. And he saw nothing. He saw $100 in his lifetime for the sale of one painting. 400 francs, approximately. So I have a fantasy story in which Vincent shows up today and finds out he ought to be a wealthy man. It's tough to collect the money.
Right,
he needs an attorney.
Right, I should say, do we know an attorney for him? There's got to be one out there.
Well, he gets an attorney, but maybe he gets the wrong one.
You got to get. Now we know why Paul Davids is successful. He's getting these little twists in there. We have a link to your website as well on our website at jerrypippin.com by this interview. But if you're listening on the radio, it's pauldavids.com. It's an S, right?
Yes.
And speaking of websites, Paul, we don't want to forget about your latest movie, a great film, Jesus in India, themovie.com. Paul, you'll be back in Nevada at the end of February. We need to sit down and do a show on Jesus of India. This is the Las Vegas Radio Show. I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. Just a note to let you know that from February 22nd through February 28th, the Las Vegas Radio Show will not be in Las Vegas. It will be down in Laughlin. And if you've never been down to Laughlin on the Colorado River, about 100 miles south of Las Vegas, you really haven't enjoyed Nevada to its fullest. We'll be at the Aquarius Hotel taping shows. We'll be telling you more about it on future Las Vegas radio shows. So if you're going to be down in the Laughlin area at the end of February, come by and be on the Jerry Pippin Show, or at least be in the audience. In a moment, the Las Vegas radio show will continue with Paul Davids and his great movie, don't forget it, JesusInIndia.com. You can see all about it. Well, the movie's not called that. It's called Jesus in India. The movie is called Jesus in India. We'll be right back. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Marv.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
no other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon now. $85 a person. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at MarvelousMarv.com.
Welcome back to the Las Vegas Radio Show. Paul Davids, writer, producer, director, is our guest. He has a new film out. It's going to win a lot of awards, I'm here to tell you, from Jesus to India. But, Paul, we were talking about your website. Oh, by the way, there's a website for the film, JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. There's also a website on Paul Davids. Paul Davids, that's with an S. On your website, the personal one, what kind of things can one find there?
Well, I have something about all of my projects. They'll find the Star Wars books. Okay. They'll find the movie Roswell. They'll find something about the first movie that I ever wrote, which called She Dances Alone, which had Max von Sydow and Bud Cort of Harold and Maude, and it was a story about the ballet dancer Nijinsky and his daughter. He was at one time Nijinsky, around before World War I, was the greatest ballet dancer in the world. And that was directed by Robert Dornhelm, who did the movie Rudy about Rudy Giuliani, and recently redid Spartacus, done many, many films. That was the first one for me. And then there was Roswell, and then there was a film I produced and directed called Timothy Leary's Dead. Now, that's a feature documentary about the life of the LSD guru of Harvard, the hippie days, Timothy Leary, and I worked with him filming this documentary the year before he died, and I collected clips of his whole life, and there's the words of a Moody Blues song written and sung way before he died called Timothy Leary's Dead. Mm-hmm. And at the time they sang it, they were using it to mean he's irrelevant. The world has passed him by. But in my film, it refers to him dying, and it's about death.
You know, the documentaries came in because of Fahrenheit 9/11 and things like that.
Yeah.
Before...
They're hot right now.
Yes, they are. So
the ones that make a strong statement. You know what, but there's little documentaries and big ones, and there's personal documentaries, and there's documentaries that star the filmmaker, and then there's erudite ones that just deal with the subject matter. But there is a newfound interest, and the fact that a documentary can make over $100 million, I mean, Michael Moore, in business terms, absolutely unheard of. Now, I have a little documentary I'd like to call your listeners' attention to. It's called The Artist and the Shaman, and they can find it at Amazon.com. And it's my personal story of being an artist in Sedona, Arizona, working with a shaman, working with a Native American with mystic propensity, who took me up into the mountains, up into those red rock cliffs, and showed me, from a spiritual standpoint, what I should paint in order to capture the magic of the land. And he performed ceremonies while I created a series of very unusual paintings of Sedona. And we, in the course of this, discovered a strange connection between his son, his little boy, and my departed father. And the movie explores the mystery of the connection between his son and my father. So that, it's such a small documentary, you have to find it at Amazon.com. It will never compete with Fahrenheit 9/11.
I didn't realize you were in Sedona for a while.
Yes, I spent a lot of time in Sedona.
Okay, well, that explains the charisma, right?
I hope so. It's a beautiful part of the country.
And before I let you go, Paul, one other thing. Location seems to be important in movies and television. Vegas has had lots of TV shows, only two are successful. This current, the one on NBC, I think it runs it sporadically. That's another thing, I think, as a television producer. Be kind of tough. You get the time slot and keep it for over 6 weeks. You got to build it up, and they don't give you any time.
Well, it's a war to establish yourself, to get into a second season. Primetime television is incredibly competitive. And, of course, now we live in the era of reality TV, which is a whole other equation where we don't have the scripting. But in the movies, it's the same thing. It's the battle for the Friday night grosses, the opening night grosses. A big film either makes it on that first Friday night or bring out the handkerchiefs and start weeping.
Thanks very much, Paul. I've enjoyed it.
Jerry, thank you.
Hey, Casey Clare and our production staff, they're geniuses. I mean, we talked to him about Starry, Starry Night. Guess what? They had the song ready. So here it is, Don McLean.
Starry, Starry Night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze, reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful. Starry, starry night, portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget, like the strangers that you've met. The ragged men in ragged clothes, a silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will.
On the last show, we had an excerpt of a conversation we did with Mike Korda, a composer friend of mine in Las Vegas, and a listener, Janice Walker, remembered me doing a tribute to Robert Goulet when he passed away, in which Mike Korda was part of it. That's what triggered her to memory. And she asked me if we'd play it now on the Las Vegas memory section. So let's do that. An icon of pop music has joined the passing parade. An icon of pop music has joined the passing parade. Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. Last week, Robert Goulet passed away in a Los Angeles hospital awaiting a lung transplant. Because of Camelot in the 60s on Broadway, Goulet was associated with Broadway music. But really, Goulet himself loved Las Vegas. He moved to Las Vegas permanently in 1974. On his office wall there, he was very proud of a photo taken on the Strip a couple of decades or so back. He showed the marquees of the old Desert Inn and the Frontier Hotels, located across the street from each other on the Strip. Both of the signs said Robert Goulet was appearing nightly. Actually, the photo was taken early in the morning after he closed at the DI, as they like to call it, and just before he would open the next night at the Frontier. I met Robert Goulet only once. I was with my friend Mike Korda, the composer. Korda took me backstage in the 90s, if I remember correctly, at the Flamingo to meet Robert Goulet, who was appearing there nightly. Goulet boomed out in his big voice, "Korda!" And he walked across the empty stage well before showtime. I remember him as slim and extremely good-looking and healthy, and that famous smile we all knew from his TV appearances. He liked Mike Korda a lot, and he actually had recorded two of his songs. But one of them had made unique history. It probably really helped Goulet with his Las Vegas career. It was a simple little thing, but a beautiful song that Korda had written and one that Goulet had recorded called The Green Years of Love. For years, they played this at sign-off time on Channel 8. Mike Korda, in an interview, told me once how this came about.
Well, I got it to Channel 8. I got it to the general manager, who liked it so much that he says, "We'll use it every night."
That's kind of unique, really.
That was on for years, you know. And after about 7, 8, 9 years, I don't know, I called the gentleman and I said, "I just wondered if we can work something out and for some sort of a royalty for, or something, you know." Well, he said, "Oh, well, we're planning on dropping it," he said.
Yeah.
All I did was stir the waters a little bit, you know.
Robert Goulet probably called you and thanked you too.
Green, green are the years that I spend with you. Yet to be sung. today we will say how beautiful are the green years of
love. Composition, Robert Goulet. It helped Goulet, I'm sure, on the strip with that song on television every night, and that song introduced Mike Korda to Mickey Rooney.
He told me that he heard Robert Goulet's recording on that TV thing at night, and he was so impressed with it. I can't remember. I don't know whether he called me for. I think I was contacted by somebody that knows him, mm-hmm. and they got us together. And Mickey said, I heard your recording of Goulet singing The Green Years of Love, and that's why I wanted to meet you. So that's how that whole thing started, and then I produced many recordings.
Tonight, the Las Vegas Strip is busy. Lots of action and sounds of activity. But there is a little piece missing. And it will be missing not only tonight, but every night from now on. The charm and the mighty voice of 73-year-old Robert Goulet. May he rest in peace. I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a vacation idea for this summer, or really any time, that is unique, different, and affordable. I'm talking about a tour of the Grand Canyon in a van with Marvelous Marv, the world-famous tour guide. Marvelous Marv has lived in the Grand Canyon area for well over two decades, and he will show you things that no other tour guide will, and all the while fill you in on the history and the mystery of the giant canyon itself. When you go on a tour with Marv, you get to see the best viewpoints and the best exhibits. He knows this canyon. He knows this area of Arizona. Now, on this page, there's a banner you can click on, and it will take you to Marv's website, where you can get all the answers about Marv and his Grand Canyon tour. This is a vacation you will treasure forever. Check it out, won't you? Marvelous Marv's Grand Canyon Tours. From the early 50s until now, no one does it better than the Platter.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Shades of night are falling, it's twilight time.
Only you can to make all this world seem right. Only you can to make the darkness bright.
I can't even think of rapture in blue. With the world far away and your lips close to mine. Oh, when your heart's on fire, you must be alive. Smoke gets in your eyes.
The Magnificent Platters. Gene Bennett, we're in your office in Las Vegas, and we've been talking about the Platters on several of these Las Vegas radio shows with you. And I think if people have been listening to all of the programs, as we've unveiled not only your career with the Platters, but with Lawrence Welk, Liberace, and other acts, they finally realize, I think, something that you and I have known for a long time. It takes a lot of talent, but it takes breaks. You know, you got to have luck.
Because, there again, if it hadn't happened just the way it did, and we hadn't played just the right places when we did, yeah, it could have gone completely haywire.
That's the magic and also the misery of show
business. That's the truth. Some things just won't happen, and right. Other things happen right. That you least expect.
Or that you don't, it just come out of the blue.
Yeah, that's why it's such a fascinating business. I know it's hooked me all my life. I never did get to sing to the up to my expectations, but I've had such a good time with all the other singers. And
well, Gene, the interesting thing about the Platters is I don't guess they had a final concert or anything. I mean, they never really officially broke up.
No.
They just kept replacing
just kept replacing. Okay. Yeah, we kept replacing. But we did have we had a pretty much of a breakup in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was inevitable because Tony was such an alcoholic that he was just destroying himself. But we got him before that happened. We actually, right after that happened, we'd still managed to get him with Reprise Records, Frank Sinatra's label.
The big label.
And you could get magazines, any kind of domestic magazine, and there was Frank Sinatra ads and everything, mm-hmm. But the last time we sent Tony to over to Japan, he went on stage and he was so drunk he could hardly stand up, and they fired him. They sent
Why don't
him home.
We play My Prayer? I think that was the best thing Tony did, don't you?
When the twilight is gone and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart. And here in my heart you will stay while I pray. My prayer is to linger with you at the end of the day, in a dream that's divine. My prayer is a rapture in blue, with the world far away and your lips close to mine. My prayer answer you give. May they still be the same, for as long as we live.
I always liked your group you had down at the Four Queens.
That was a great run.
Yeah, they were great people.
Yeah, I had Monroe Powell with me for 25 years.
And who was the guy at the D-Boy? Williams?
Gene Williams.
Yeah, right.
He's still around town. Every once in a while, we'll send him out with our group now. Right now, our group is doing mainly weekends or, you know, one-nighters and... It's the business has changed quite a bit. Now, we just got him back, however, from a month in Australia, and they want us back next year.
Well, we have lots of listeners in Australia.
They're very popular, so many of the groups, the people that I hired, they went and formed groups. And, you just can't keep up.
I remember the Platters in some of those old Alan Freed movies, and maybe Dick Clark, too, I don't know. Buck Ram... he went to Europe, but I remember the Platters were doing a lot of standards.
Oh, yeah. He selected and he arranged them. Mm-hmm. And when he recorded a number of the albums over in Paris or in England, they would send David Carroll over to work with Buck. Buck would have the group have their parts, and he'd have the arrangement sketched out. And then he would go over everything with David Carroll for a day or so, and then David would hole up for about 3 days. We wouldn't even see him, and he'd come out and he'd have all these big orchestrations for 25 piece orchestras, and Buck was right there, and they
so he understood what
Buck told him. He said, "I want to hear this here, and I want and he had already sketched them out.
Now this was an old song when you recorded it 50 years ago. That was an old standard from the 30s by Jerome Kern.
My true love was true. I was blind. Something here inside cannot be denied. Said someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, when your heart's on fire, you must realize smoke gets in your eyes. I chant them and I gaily laugh to think they could doubt my love. Yet today my love has flown away. I am I cannot hide. So I smile and say, when a lonely flame dies, smoke gets in your eyes.
Smoke gets in your eyes.
Smoke gets in.
I think you've had a love affair with life, period. Gene Bennett, you're in your 80s. You look great.
I guess love of life more than anything else.
you're very youthful.
I love what I'm doing. You know, I am looking forward to some very big things next year.
So you're not about to give up.
I'm not about to give up. And with the help of my doctor and Fosamax, no osteoporosis.
No, you bounce around like a young woman. That's what I meant by that.
Well, it is. I do think it's the will, and I just really enjoy what I'm doing. Sure, we have our ups and downs. Everything does. But I think, tomorrow's a better day, so, you know.
Gene Bennett, it's been a thrill. Our time's up, unfortunately. You need to write down a detailed record of all of your things in the music business. I mean, it's incredible.
You got to write a book.
It's great history.
Well, I'm working on it. I'm trying to get everything calendared, and I've got some people that are interested in helping me.
Thank you for taking the time to tell our audience about the Platters. This has been our musical biography on the Platters, the great soft rock group of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. It keeps going. Thanks for listening, everyone. Roberta Scott, our on-location producer. Jane Swartley, our web producer. And that wraps up our look at the Platters. But, Jane, I'm sure you'll be back. The Platters started in Las Vegas at the old Moulin Rouge. Went to the Flamingo, and then the rest is history. We've been looking back at Las Vegas memories on the Las Vegas Radio Show. Until next time, thanks for listening. Cheers.